scythes, but more than that it was impossible to see. Though cast from high-grade adamantium, the gates were smashed, one bent almost in two by an inconceivable blow, the other buckled. Still, there were no corpses, no dead, only inorganic materials left behind.
"Slow down," said Felix.
The eeriness of the mountain put him on guard.
"Approach at three-quarters speed. Weapons ready."
The sun was heading off to the west and falling behind the fortress monastery's lower reaches. The uppermost tower atop the mountain bathed in golden light, as it had every evening since the time the emperor had walked and breathed. The defences cast long black shadows that crept out to meet the convoy. The outer gatehouse's drum towers embraced them in cool dark. These lesser gates were twisted scraps, and the gateway had been blocked with barricades. It appeared they had been held for a while after the first breach. With no dead, judging the course of the battle was difficult. How very strange to see a battlefield like that, still appearing fresh, preserved by the vacuum, scattered with debris and shell casings, but devoid of combatants. It was a model landscape before the principal actors had been added. Commodus's tank shunted aside the remnants of the barricades. These had been overrun and torn down at some point, and presented little obstacle to the hover tanks. What was left was pounded flat by their gravity fields as they floated through.
"Halt!"
voxed Commodus. The tank's square body blocked Felix's view into the bailey.
"There are no threat indicators." "No enemy," said Commodus,
sending a pick feed of what lay ahead to Felix.
"We are entering the presence of the honored dead." "You are right to call halt. Go forwards. Slowly, Daedalus," ordered Felix.
"I have a higher regard for technology than Thracian," Daedalus said, for once without levity. "I will be careful."
War gear was all that was left. Empty suits of power armor lay around the bailey, most concentrated before the main gate. The bodies inside had been taken by the Kraken, and though some suits had been disarticulated during consumption, others lay as they had fallen, empty gauntlets wrapped around gun grips and swords, their sagging body gloves holding battle plate together in semblance of life.
"Honor the battle gear of the dead," intoned Daedalus. "Honor the memory of those left behind."
"Bring us to a halt, Daedalus," said Felix. "Disturb nothing. We must allow Thracian to retrieve the gear of the fallen, if he so wishes."
Daedalus maneuvered the tank to a gentle stop, and though the pulsed waves of the grav generators rocked a few of the abandoned warsuits, not one piece was damaged.
"Column halt," Felix voxed the others. "Chapter master, I offer my regret and respect."
To his own men, he said,
"I am venturing outside. Ixen and Yansar, follow me."
"There are no detected threats, my lord," said Daedalus.
"You know what to do, should any emerge," said Felix. "Rear ramp."
He stood as the ramp descended. Before he set out, Commodus voxed him.
"Stay within! Earthquake! A big one!"
The tank's contra-gravity field cushioned it from the effects of the tremor, but outside the empty armor suits jiggled where they lay, and loose material fell from damaged buildings.
"The mountain is unstable," said Daedalus. "We should consider putting our aerial assets on alert for evacuation as soon as we've disabled the defense matrix."
Felix wasn't listening. He couldn't hear. By the time the tremor hit its peak, he was somewhere else entirely. Chapter 8. An Irrefusable Offer. Circa 6,500 years ago. Strange music played an intricate mathematical progression of mellow strings. Felix screamed as his body was cut open. There was little pain. Call was no sadist, but certain of the procedures demanded that his subjects remain conscious, and the smell of Felix's own burning flesh as the las scalpels sliced it terrified him. The lack of human company made it worse. He was on his own, surrounded by unfeeling machines that moved around him on their predetermined paths of torment, incapable of hearing his terror or of feeling mercy. Mechanical spider limbs bearing blades and laser cutters and little pots of quivering organic jellies blurred past. Today they were cutting into his skull. His head was pinned into place, and he could not move. He felt the rubber tips of ruthless fingers peel back his scalp, heard the whining screech of blade biting bone, felt the soft cup suck onto his cranium and remove the top of his skull, as if it were the lid to a jar. Other machines put things in there. They poked his brain. Strange colours bled across his vision. Phantom smells teased him. He burst into song through his tears as the seat of his soul was prodded, tugged and tested. And it went on, and on, and on. There were hundreds of other youths undergoing the same procedures. He could hear them outside his sealed, sterile tube. Hundreds of other boys who were not really boys anymore, but hormone-bulked warrior things halfway to maturity. Many of them screamed and cried. Felix need not have been ashamed of his fear.
Integration of stage 5 at 97%. Primaris subject 10079983, operating within optimal parameters.
A cool counterseptic mist squirted over his exposed brain.
Please, please, let me go, he pleaded.
Bang. A soft bump as his skullcap kissed his lower cranium. The whining busyness of a bone welder moved around his head. Hot bone smell made him want to sneeze. The thought of that panicked him. He envisioned his brain shaken loose.
Please,
he whimpered, as his shaved scalp was tucked back into place, and another arm, bearing spools of thread and a jabbing needle, stitched it tight. A cold nozzle pressed onto the crook of his clamped-down arm and hissed.
Please,
he said. He was falling asleep.
Be brave, my little warriors, said the monster's voice over the music. I offer you something no other shall have. Power to serve humanity as no others have served. In service to mankind, there is glory.
But I don't, Felix slurred. But I don't want power.
Bang.
And that is why you shall have it, said the monster, close by his ear.
Blackness. Then,
where are we going?
Said a voice that was the monster's, but not.
Can you not at least tell me that?
No, said another voice, a woman. Patience, please.
Bang. But I don't...
Circa 10,000 years ago.
See why you can't explain just a little to us.
The woman came to a standstill so suddenly her boots squeaked on the black marble floor, bringing Call and Friedish to an ungraceful halt. Her soldiers stopped flawlessly. My information was correct. You are irritatingly garrulous. They were far away from the miserable districts housing the refugees, high up in Riser's upper levels, where glorious ways clad in precious stone and chased with symbolic golden circuitry lifted high ceilings on fine columns, and the priests of the cult Mechanicus went about in dignified debate, guarded by cyborgs with burnished augmetics. Call took it all in his stride, behaving as if he belonged there. Friedish cowered, so overawed by the high and mighty cult lords around him, he shrank away when they so much as glanced at him. Call smiled ingratiatingly.
Speech is the first mode of informational exchange. My entire life, my entire culture is concerned with the acquisition of information. You must forgive me a few questions, said Call.
The woman gave him a hard look.
The cult Mechanicus, she shook her head. The Emperor should never have thrown in his lot with your kind. You are anathema to the imperial truth. Gods, worship of knowledge, insanity.
She resumed walking.
Without our knowledge, none of your warrior's enhancements would be possible, said Call.
He waved his hand at the woman's guards.
Our veneration of the machine god's truths has preserved his gifts.
She stopped again.
Science made my warriors, she said. Not superstition, not praying to a non-existent god, not singing to anything. I am a scientist. You are a witch doctor.
She began walking again, faster this time, so that Call and Friedish were forced into a trot to keep up with her.
Then we are of one mind, surely, said Call. You and I are both questers for the truth.
We are not, she said. I pursue the truth. You follow a religion. There is no gulf wider than that between our opinions in all the universe.
I think you are wrong, said Call, who was never one to let a good debate die. Faith in rationalism is still faith.
I think you're a threat to the Imperium, she said. There has never been and never will be a true religion, except that followed by the great enemy, and that is not only evil to the root, it is predicated on a billion lies.
She didn't address them, but shouted forwards, as if she couldn't even bring herself to look at the tech priests.
Yet we rationalists dwindle, while your kind prospers. The inclusion of the Adeptus Mechanicus on the Council of Terror is the death knell for reason. So you enjoy your moral superiority all you want in the coming years, she said. I want you to remember my words, because my opinion will trouble you for all time.
She turned down a side corridor, smaller than the major way they had been following, and ablaze with the light of knowledge conveyed down optic data pipes embedded in the walls.
Why? Said Call.
Because I believe you know that it is true.
They arrived at a golden door, twice the height of a man, guarded by cyborg warriors, almost as tall.
Why have you brought us here to the uppermost sky levels if you hate us so much?
I have been ordered to, she said. I am doing my job.
She stood still, while scans from the heavy combat servitors ran down her body from top to toe.
It's not me that wants you, she said. If it were my decision, we would never have come here. The Lord Geneticist, Director Ezekiel Sedain, wishes to meet you.
Call was surprised.
I know that name, he said. Ezekiel Sedain. Is he here on Risa?
You may enter, Ultrix Herminia,
the servitors boomed in unison.
He is not, said the Ultrix.
The doors opened onto a hangar, housing a small, sleek ground-to-orbit transfer shuttle. An atmospheric shield shone over the entrance. They were so high up in the Risen cityscape that the smoggy brown of the atmosphere turned to black at the top of the view, and the steel-skinned planet curved away below into petrochemical obscurity.
He is on Terra, and he wishes to see you there.
Terra? Said Friedish. We're going to Terra?
Not you. Just him, said the Ultrix. You're staying here.
Something in the hangar made a hollow bang.
Hang on just one moment, said Call, holding up a finger.
He gave the Ultrix his most winning smile.
I'm not going anywhere without Friedish. If this Director Sedain wants to see me, Friedish comes too.
Bang.
What is that noise? Said Friedish.
Ultrix Herminia sighed in annoyance.
Very well, but I warn you that you have very little room to bargain. Do not use up my good graces at once. When we arrive at Terra, you may wish to save all the favours you can for your negotiations with Director Sedain.
Bargain, said Friedish. Negotiations? What is that banging?
He peered round the door.
Bang. Do stop that, Friedish, said Call. All that simpering. What bargain?
The Lord Sedain has an offer for you.
She smiled unpleasantly.
I sincerely advise you not to reject it.
Bang.
One of your servitors is malfunctioning,
said Friedish, pointing out a cyborg repeatedly walking into the wall.
I can fix it.
Bang. The metal body case thumped into the metal.
What if we elect to stay here?
Said Call, also ignoring Friedish.
It's a little too late for that.
Her warriors spread out behind the priests, guns raised.
You're coming with me, like it or not.
Bang. Circa 10,000 years ago. The metal hammered the boulder twice in succession. Bang, bang. The cliffs reached up for the slate-grey heavens. The world was of dust and sand. There were signs everywhere that it was not always so. Erosive water patterns carved the stone into smooth undulations, so very different to the shapes cut by wind. Organic traces clung on, though long dead, dried out roots and preserved rhizomes excavated by the careful archaeology of the breeze. Bang! Bang! The wind was getting into its stride, lifting up the dust of 1,000 dead civilizations, casting handfuls of grave gravel against stone, chipping it away grain by grain to the beat of the metallic drum, uncovering and recovering the mess of 40,000 years of human civilization.
Did I disturb you?
The man's voice said. The natural reaction was to turn and look. Call began the process, but he could not turn. The act should have been simplicity itself. All he had to do was move. A cascade of synaptic impulses racing from the brain, decided subconsciously before conscious decision. The id tricking the ego, that deception that enables all humans to be without being, activating the limbs, setting the body in motion, all without choice, but with the illusion of choice. Turn. Simple. But he did not turn.
Bang. Bang. Bang.
Call bowed his head and dropped to his knee, facing away from the man. He did not like to kneel. He never had. Being so tall, it made him look ridiculous. But the being demanded it. Not the man himself. He disliked bowing and scraping. But the essence of him, his soul, was so potent, you could feel the heat of it on your skin. That screamed out for respect. He had no name, at least not one that he shared, but he called himself the Emperor of Mankind. The gall to call oneself so seemed immense until you met him. Anyone who had ever met him knew the title was no hollow conceit. It was not born of arrogance. It was simply apt.
You may rise, said the Emperor. You have no need to kneel. Knowledge should not kneel to power.
He smiled. His humor washed over Call in a warm, uplifting wave.
It should be the other way around. Alas, it is not always so. But we should try our best to treat each other with respect and make it true. I could not have said it better myself, said Call.
He got to his feet. Still, he did not look, but kept his eyes downcast. He had a fleeting sight of a brown-skinned hand. He looked away from it.
Bang!
The metal cared nothing for the doings of men, no matter how mighty. It cared only for its feud with a rock.
Bang!
Circa 100 years ago.
Bang! 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 Fall back! The outer gate is taken! Fall back to the walls!
Thracian stood on the bastion walk abutting the main gatehouse, looking down into a courtyard where death reigned unopposed. An Icarus squad cannon chattered violently off to his right in front of the outermost tower of the main gate. Walls behind him rose to the sky, walls that should have been strong enough to hold back any enemy. The men that built them had not accounted for the hive fleets. A carnifex reared up in fury and took its death wound from a las cannon fired at point-blank range. The beast flung its club fists wide, and it flopped down with a crack of chitin on rockcrete. But its work was done. The barricades across the gateway were smashed aside, leaving the bailey unprotected. Two more carnifexes lumbered through the gate over their fallen broodmate. Massive talons stabbed at men. One of the beasts carried a biocannon, whose ammunition sacks pulsed with its eagerness to fire. Its embedded eye roved over the banquet of targets. The carnifex raised the weapon, the sacks constricted, and a rush of hyperacidic bile engulfed two space marines. The agony they endured as it ate through their soft seals and into their bodies was enough to make the Emperor's Chosen scream. All along the bailey wall, Thracian's warriors were embattled. Creatures bounded up the dead, piled at the front of the fortifications, using them as ramps to launch themselves at the defenders. They did not care for their own survival. Most were blown apart, but for every 100 that cast themselves to certain death, one got through, and the horde numbered in the millions. There were hundreds of thousands of winged tyrannids, too many to count, so many they filled the sky with an endless blur of crimson and cream. They shrieked as they flew, as if they were in pain, a harsh chorus that blended into one unending wail, so overpowering it seemed it would outlast the universe. A constant barrage from the fortress's guns punched holes in the swarm, creating a rain of blood and flesh. The void shield flickered, pulsing sheets of purple light when bombardment cysts impacted it. Some thousands of the beasts were caught by displacement after effects and ripped apart. Others flew so fast they tripped the shields themselves, but each hole torn into the living clouds closed instantly, swallowed as swiftly as stones in a lake. A gargoyle dived at Thracian, vomiting bioplasma from its mouth, while the weapon thing bonded to its forelimbs, squirmed and spasmed, ejaculating a stream of acidic slime and frenzied beetles. The insects splattered harmlessly off Thracian's battleplate. The plasma nearly took off his head. Thracian loosed a single bolt as he dived aside. His unerring aim hit the gargoyle square in the chest. The bolt exploded deep inside, obliterating the torso. The flock sped around the explosion. Detached leathery wings spiraled down and came apart like quick tree seeds in the autumn. All along the battlement, yellow and black armored space marines fired upwards, bolt guns on full automatic, shaking their arms. They crossed their fire with perfect discipline, covering each other when they had to reload. The rain of fluid and shattered flesh spattered men, fortifications and machines, so all was slick with alien vitae. Bowed serfs ran along the ramparts, handing precious clips of bolt rounds to their masters from the ammunition sleds they dragged. The sleds were getting lighter. The chapter was running out of ammunition. At the start of the invasion, the armory had brimmed with a brassy treasure of bullets. They had spent it quickly. If Thracian had had time to check the ammo counts for his men, he would have seen a bank of angry red digits blinking down to zero, but he had fewer seconds to spare than he had bolts. Mortis runes clamored for his attention. His eyes darted across the walls to seek their sources. Brother Bastable carried down by three gaunts, Brother Genuus obliterated by a plasma blast, Brother Frodan thrashing under a flock of winged rippers. Everywhere he turned to watch, another warrior died on the wall. His apothecaries dashed from place to place, trying to salvage precious gene seed. One was plucked off his feet and borne skywards, another was forced back by the tide of the enemy from his brothers, whose writhing bodies were buried by swarms of tiny, toothed organisms. The scythes of the Emperor were dying quickly.
"Get back to the main wall! Abandon the outer defences!" he roared from his voxmeter, simultaneously sending the message by company-wide voxlink.
He pulsed urgent runes of retreat and consolidation to his men. The fortress monastery's curtain wall soared above them, seemingly indomitable. But it was not enough. It could never be enough. The carnifexes at the gates came forwards under heavy fire. Their footsteps shook the ground. Like a bullet easing from a wound in a surgeon's tweezers, the first entered the courtyard, then the second, and a flood of death came behind them, red as blood.
"Back to the main walls!"
Doorways led into the main gatehouse towers from the Bailey Wall Walk, offering a chance of continuing the fight, at least for a while. But his men were beleaguered, and promised reinforcements from Sothopolis were slow in arriving.
"Retreat!"
shouted Thracian. Those scythes on the left wall walk, that part built into the cliff face of Mount Pharos's peak, were cutting their way through the flocks of gargoyles and making for the armored portal. Thracian covered his men, waving them through, counting off each one safely inside the walls with paternal relief as they passed him.
"Move, move, move!"
he yelled, slapping his warriors on their pauldrons, firing at the beasts, trying to end them. A million monsters came for them, landing on the walls. Though the aerial tyrannids were helpless on the ground, they were driven by their overlords to hurl themselves onto the battlements, where they flopped and screeched and bit. Boots smashed crested heads. Guns ended hundreds of Xenos lives. Under Thracian's guidance, the left wall emptied of space marines. On the right, the situation was hopeless. The walls there rose atop the cliffs and looked down a sheer drop of thousands of feet onto the distant roofs of Sothopolis. The cliff was no protection. The enemy swarmed over the walls. The scythes of the Emperor there were isolated from one another and split into twos or threes. Things with bony blades for limbs scrambled up the sheer face of the mountain and leapt over the crenellations. The warriors on the main wall were too preoccupied with the endless swarms to provide covering fire. Those on the left were intent on their own escape. Out there, on the right, Thracian's men were dying, close enough to see, too far away to help. The mortise alarms rang on. The fingernail pictograph display of his company pulsed with amber and red lights as his squads were annihilated. Something shook the fortress, something from inside. A small tremor, significant nonetheless. The guns cut out. Thracian stared at the sky. The void shield flickered and died. The swarms poured down unhindered.
"Command! The defense batteries have ceased firing!" said Thracian.
For the first time in 100 years, he felt panic.
"The shields are down! Advise immediate evacuation! Command! Please advise!"
He moved to the side to avoid a plummeting gargoyle. It smashed wetly on the wall walk where he had been standing. He shot down three more with his bolt pistol. Vox comms from the Citadel bleeped for his attention. A line of text on the helm plate spelled out Captain Masseria's name.
Main guns are offline. Down to lesser turrets. Get back from the walls. We will hold them at bay until the others return. Await reinforcement from the Satharan Defense Force.
We need to evacuate. There are no reinforcements, Thracian shouted.
The hissing and shrieking of the Tyranids was deafening despite the best efforts of his autosensors to dampen it.
Thorcera would not want this. We will be destroyed. We must abandon Sothar.
Thorcera is not here. We must fall back. Hold the citadel until the rest of the chapter responds to the recall.
This is suicide, Thracian replied. Sothar is lost. Our defenses are gone.
Our brothers are coming. The people of this world are coming. We cannot leave them to face this alone.
Our brothers are dead. The message went out too late. Sotharan ground forces have likely been annihilated. We condemn the chapter to extinction if we remain. You are dooming us, brother!
Thracian shot four bolts, one after the other, each one bringing a killsign clarion from his helm.
I am in command, Masseria said. Retreat to the citadel.
Thracian swore. The sky swarm was thinning. He was too well versed in the tactics of the hive mind to see this as a reprieve. The Tyranids had seen the shields were gone.
Incoming spore drop, he bellowed.
The last of his men that could were retreating through the tower portals. Seven were left isolated in a courtyard, now crawling with Xenos. He looked skywards. The gargoyles and shrikes were swirling around in a vortex that reached for the void, creating a clear space down to the ground. He saw the low bodies of huge hive ships in the sky, white and blue as a daytime moon in the sunlight. From them, black shapes fell.
Anti-air wall guns! Prioritize drop spores! He commanded.
The last of his men was through the left door portal. It rotated shut, crushing a gargoyle scuttling after to paste.
Seal left wall gate.
In the wall, mechanisms injected fast-setting ferrofoams into the door cavity. Thracian descended stairs into the courtyard and ran towards the right portal to help the warriors retreating there. The huge reliefs of the main gates towered beside him. Two of his warriors ran to join him, taking it in turns to fire backwards and cover his advance. He raced to save another scythe, only to see him transfixed on the sharp claws of a stooping shrike and carried off. Spores were hurtling towards the courtyard. The first was misjudged, slamming into the cliff, exploding fluids and dead gaunt strain attack beasts everywhere. The last of his men in the yard was sinking to his knees, moaning, his flesh melting under jets of hyperacid coming in from all sides. Thracian took careful aim and put a bolt through his head. Red outlines in his company schema chastened him. He had lost more than half his company. More spores came down. They had no braking mechanisms, but hit the ground at full speed, bursting on impact. Tyranid warriors struggled free, dripping in shock gels, opening fire as soon as their guns were clear of the flaccid skins of the spores. He ascended the right-hand stairs to the door in the tower. He could see Sothopolis from there. Its streets were full of a churning mass of aliens. A few Space Marine stragglers were limping through the door.
All squads, prepare to reform!
Thracian looked up to the citadel that enwrapped the peak of Mount Sothar and the ancient tower at the very center. Black swarms of Tyranids raged around it, swirling and diving in eerily synchronized murmurations. He paused a moment, caught on the knife blade of decision.
All company Thunderhawks, prepare for immediate evacuation. Company, retreat to main hangar. We are leaving. May the Emperor guard us all, he said.
He turned to go. Between him and the door, the Icarus quad cannon continued to shoot, its machine spirit smoothly spinning the gun on its turntable to track the creatures in the sky. It banged death in four-shot bursts.
Bang, 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 bang! Bang, 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 bang! Bang, 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 bang!
The sound thumped into Thracian's head. The battle's noise receded. He found he could not move. Slowly, he lowered his weapons. There was something behind him, something vast and cold. He turned slowly and looked up into the dead black eyes of a shrike. It towered over him, the upper wing limbs furled, its biocannon throbbing with the expectation of release. It did not fire. Instead, it leaned down, mouth hissing. Something looked out from behind its eyes that was immeasurably ancient and evil.
The thing there in the blackness of its soul touched his mind. It judged him. It pinned him in place. Thracian found he could not move. Such was the potency of its regard. A spray of yellow blood erupted from the thing's gut. Bolt explosions ripped it in half. The top fell away. The legs folded into themselves. The spell was broken. Brother Skadus of the 3rd Tactical Squad marched forwards, the ammo feeds on his heavy bolter clunking as they drew fresh rounds from his backpack hopper and grabbed Thracian's pauldron.
"My lord," he said, "through the wall, back behind the main defences."
A warrior lacking his legs was dragged through the door by his brothers. Ceramite clanged from adamantium, blood leaked onto the ground.
"Aye,"
said Thracian.
"You ordered us to retreat. Thracian!"
"Aye!"
"Now."
"Chapter, master,"
said Felix. Thracian blinked. He was on the wall. The quad cannon was silent at his back. Not then, but now. The dead were gone. The Tyranids absent. Cold stars burned in place of the stolen sky. The Tetrarch stood in front of him with the Archmagos Dominus call.
"What did you see?"
Felix demanded urgently.
"What did you see?"
"I saw the end of the world,"
said Thracian, numbly.
"I saw the day I was made," said Felix. "I am not alone."
"We all saw something," said Felix. "But you were entranced the longest. You ran up here. None of us could stop you."
"What about my warriors?"
"Safe, though all experienced visions."
"There were stories," Thracian began. "Stories about the mountain."
"Interesting," said Call.
"You saw something. What did you see?"
Thracian asked.
Belisarius Call smiled.
"Something almost as interesting as that."
He pointed at the wall gun and the bright silver threads connecting it to the black rock of the mountain. Chapter 9. Beacon.
"This metal here connects the gun to the Xenos device in the mountain," said Call. His bionic fingers tapped all along the length of the connection, while other limbs tasted it with sensing apparatus. The metal made an organic-looking ridge, peaked and forked like a tree root, that wrapped around the gun's podium and penetrated it in several places.
"You see here how the rock of the Pharos extrudes through the local basalt, close enough to the surface to put out these tendrils to the wall gun."
A small plasma torch emerged from an aperture on Call's side and ignited with a soft hiss. The Magos sectioned part of the silver metal. It bled green light, then flowed back together.
"Fascinating," said Call. "You said there were stories," Felix said to Thracian.
The chapter master nodded.
"Traditions, myths, talk of something under the mountain that our first chapter master, Obadei, was commanded to watch over. There are other stories, older still, of the mountain being alive. It was always assumed they were fanciful, originating because of the strange properties of the rock. There were those who held it affected the human mind and brought strange dreams. We thought nothing of it."
"There are many caves," said Felix. "Did your chapter never investigate?"
"The main apertures were filled with ferrocrete before the chapter was founded. Inside the peak, only the uppermost tunnels are clear. They are where we interred our dead. It was our solemn duty to ensure no cave was ever opened, and to keep the people of Sotha from the mountain. These duties were part of our chapter cult, never questioned, obediently upheld. But it went no further than that. This galaxy is full of wonders. What notice should we have paid to a mountain of stoppered holes? It barred scans. What of it? I've seen many odder things during my service."
"Have there been any visions noted in your records?"
"Nothing," said Thracian. "Not in 9,000 years.
"Any tremors?"
"Nothing out of the ordinary. Sotha is tectonically active. We have earthquakes and occasional volcanism, but nothing strange."
Call was humming, peering closely at the metal link. Hair-fine probes drilled into it, and he fell silent a while. Felix shook his head. He attempted readings from the mountain and the fortress.
Static rattled his auto-sensors.
This radiation is not helping, said Felix.
Call straightened.
It is not my doing. The mountain is waking. Your devices are blinded by the energies from within. It is linked to the wall guns. It is too weak to reactivate all of your weaponry. Indeed, much of it might well be incompatible with the Xenos technology. But we can be sure that it will be attempting to bring the main orbital batteries online as a first line of defense.
Call smiled behind the skin of energy holding in his air supply.
I recommend we stop it.
How? Said Thracian. I am locked out. Can you get back into the chapter, Nuosphere? Perhaps we can deactivate the fortress weapons that way.
I will do what I can, but it might not be so simple.
You said first line of defense, said Felix.
I did. The mountain is waking, but has not yet woken. However, all activity of reanimated Xenos facilities increases exponentially, especially where threat is involved. It will replace your guns with superior weaponry as soon as it can synthesize them.
You speak of Xenos, said Thracian. You say their ancient toys are more powerful than the full arsenal of an Adeptus Astartes chapter. Is that not heresy against your religion?
Oh, yes, said Call cheerily.
Multiple small limbs were performing sample-gathering operations from the metal while he spoke to them, as if his own augmetics had lives and minds of their own.
I've never been one to play by the rules. The builders of this mountain would find your guns extremely primitive. It may be heretical, but that does not stop it from being true.
Can we stop it? Said Felix. Sotha is dead, and that is a terrible shame. But worse than that is a wakening Xenos world on the edge of Lord Gilliman's domain.
Possibly, said Call.
Do you even want to stop it? Said Felix.
It is my guess, Archmagos, that you are here for more than a survey.
That is true, said Call. I was not exaggerating when I said that this mountain could save us all, but in order for it to do so, I require it to wake up.
I cannot possibly allow,
said Felix, only to be interrupted again.
Do you have any inkling what lies under our feet, Decimus?
Not much, said Felix, but I am familiar with the work of the Necrons. This metal, the green energy source, the Blackstone, this is Necron technology. A tomb world here would be a disaster. We must destroy it before it attains full reanimation.
There have never been any sign of Necrons here, said Thracian.
The unlikeliest of places have turned out to be tomb worlds, said Felix. This is my command. Should this be the first signs of a tomb world awakening, we will return from the surface. We will destroy Mount Pharos.
Just a moment, Decimus, said Call. Point the first. This is not a tomb world. Point the second. Although this is a Necron facility, ultimately it is the work of something older even than they, said Call. Although the second point is me being merely pedantic, if I am completely honest.
Felix lost his temper.
You speak obtusely all the time, Call. You do it to demonstrate your superior intellect, in which case I say bravo. We are all impressed, but I ask you to stop your games. Speak plainly. The fate of so much hangs on every passing minute.
Very well. Here is plain history, plainly delivered.
Call crossed some of his arms. His probes retreated back within his armored torso.
There was, long ago, a war in heaven, he said. So the Eldari call it, and though it happened long before mankind evolved, and before the Eldari dominated the stars, it remains prominent in their myths. From what I've pieced together from not always willing informants, the Necrons won this war, but in doing so their power was broken. They went to sleep. As we are all painfully aware, they are now waking up. This mountain has stood here since their days of greatness. Consider its shape. Consider its coating of basalt. Over the eons, it must have been submerged under water. It must have been part of the seabed and covered by volcanic eruption. Throughout this world's geological history, it has moved and shifted with the crawl of tectonic plates. Yet it has always been adapting,
always working.
What is it? Said Felix. You should tell us that, also, plainly.
It is a quantum empathic resonance beacon, said Call. The Necrons are masters of the physical realm. Their understanding of matter and the nature of the materium is so profound, they can accomplish miracles that other races must rely upon the warp to achieve. I have come to believe that their ability to travel faster than light and communicate over interstellar distances must have been dependent on networks of beacons like Mount Pharos. Exactly how, I am not sure, but I suspect at the center of every one is an entangled supermass of isolated particles, perfectly in tune with others of their kind, scattered across the galaxy. They are strange, these tangles, and powerful. Not only do they influence each other, allowing instant transmission of data, but they can also alter the sympathetic frequencies of other particles near to them, aligning them with other tangles, with targeted, predictable effects.
Explain more clearly, said Felix.
This machine exploits the fundamental laws of physics to connect multiple parts of reality together, with no need of the warp. That is the simplest way I can express it, said Kool.
I say again, we have seen nothing of this in 9,000 years, said Thracian.
You told Felix just now of the legends surrounding this mountain, said Kool.
I did.
You will admit that 9,000 years compared to 65 million years is nothing.
Relatively, yes, said Thracian.
Do you know the stories of mountain dreaming? Asked Call.
Legends, myths, old wives' tales, said Thracian, though less surely.
Apparently not. You see, we have all just experienced it.
The visions, said Felix, they come from the mountain.
They do, but they are not visions. They are direct interfaces with the past, and, as you all no doubt experienced, with each other's past. The realignment of one's present physical state with its past state is exquisite genius at work. But this sharing of pasts astounds me.
He laughed.
I, Belisarius Call, am astounded.
He reached under his hood and pulled something from the back of his skull with a small click. Call displayed a small black-green bead in his palm.
I fitted this before I arrived to allow me to communicate with the Pharos. Apparently you don't need this to hear the mountain's call. The machine is stronger than I thought. Perhaps it will help me interact more deeply with it.
He replaced the bead.
Maybe not.
That's dangerous, said Felix.
It is, said Call. A lot of what I do is dangerous. I do have a reputation to uphold, Decimus, so forgive me.
Has it been dormant all this time? Said Felix.
Records in the Library of Ptolemy suggest much activity before an attack during the Great Heresy War by the Eighth Legion. Thereafter, its functionality was compromised.
Was it ever restored?
Far from it, said Call. My brothers in those days gutted the mountain of all its machinery, so I thought.
He paused.
It is conceivable I was among them.
You are unsure, said Felix.
Archmagos, much of what you say is alarming, not only the provenance of this beacon, but the cavalier way you approach it.
I'm not entirely reckless, I promise. If I was here before, I have no recollection. My memory is patchy, to use the Ultramarian vernacular.
He paused again.
That may change if the mountain has its way.
Explain further, demanded Felix.
This series of fugue events is characterized by the random accessing of memory fragments, or more precisely, realignment of our present consciousness with fragments of our past. In my case, all of these moments were lost to me. You might find it surprising, Tetrarch, but there are many gaps in my memory. I've been mind-wiped by my enemies at least once, probably twice, and although I keep comprehensive data archives as backup to my internal memcores, and am indeed obliged to memory dump every 5 centuries, owing to the limitations of storage within my physical frame, data corruption has taken its inevitable toll. Some of my stores are lost, Some are destroyed. Some have been stolen. Despite my best efforts to preserve my experiences and my knowledge, I have failed. My existence is an incomplete book, even to me, its author.
He took a modest bow.
My time aboard your ship is the only part of my life I do not clearly recall, said Felix. I am seeing it again.
No, said Cole. You are living it again. The machine is responsible.
But why, said Thracian, why is it doing it?
It could be a form of attack, exposing us to these lost parts of our lives.
Cole shrugged, which for him was a complicated motion involving multiple limbs.
How is more interesting to me. Some advanced form of field interaction, I suspect. As far as I'm aware, the Pharos has no noosphere, as my colleagues would understand it, but they don't understand much. It is a machine, and all machines can be accessed. The trick is knowing how.
He tapped the back of his head, where the bead was seated, then gestured at the fortress monastery gates.
I know how to gain access. The knowledge was gained at cost, as much knowledge is, but the Pharos will find it is not the only one who can reach into the beings of others.
I do not like this, said Felix.
He stared at the silver web binding the wall gun to the alien device.
I am unconvinced that we should be here.
Let me put my case. You must learn to understand how important this installation is. Although I surmise this beacon network to be crucial to the Necron's mastery of space, the number of nodes must have been relatively small, because I found only one other similar to this in all my life.
That you can remember, said Felix.
Granted. Although something that important, I make sure to record in multiple places, said Cole. The other one was destroyed utterly from the inside out. It was dead. This one is alive, and it's repairing itself. It may indeed have already repaired itself.
He looked up to the mountain peak.
This is an opportunity of inestimable value.
As miraculous as these beacons are, or were, the secrets of their technology is not my primary goal, though I stress any knowledge gathered would be most welcome. In each of these mountains must be a vast repository of wisdom. You are aware of Blackstone, also known as Noctolith. This mountain is made of it, said Felix.
Indeed it is.
Then you want to quarry it, said Thracian.
Call laughed.
No, definitely not. I'm not some backward data grubber from Metallica. I am the prime conduit of the Omnissiah.
He said this ironically, leaving the others unsure whether Cole took the title bestowed upon him seriously.
Noctolith is perhaps the greatest work of the Necrons. During this war of theirs, the warp was used as a weapon by their enemies, the fathers of the Eldari. The Necrons found a way to fight back against it.
Cole swayed forwards.
Since your father returned, Felix, the Adeptus Mechanicus has been waging its own war to gather and understand the substance, how to tune it to amplify the warp or shut it out altogether. Blackstone can save us. In this mountain, I expect to find information as to exactly how, and detailed maps of the prior Necron Empire that will allow me to find more of it. Enough, perhaps, to stitch closed the Great Rift and banish chaos from our galaxy forever. This is what I will achieve. This is my great work. A new network of pylons like those lost on Cadia, but far greater. I intend nothing less than the salvation of mankind.
Thracian and Felix looked at one another.
Tetrarch, do you intend to allow him to do this? Said Thracian. The use of alien technology is proscribed by the Adeptus Mechanicus. By some of its sects only, said Felix. Do not forget that alien technology saved our Primarch, and that it was alien technology that held the Cadian Gate closed for so long. It is your world. Allow call access or not, but I will destroy this mountain once he is done.
Not until our gene seed is laid to rest, said Thracian.
He leaned against the parapet and looked out over the bailey. His men were collecting the war gear of the fallen with great reverence.
If the Archmagos can restore Sotha and redeem my chapter's honor,
I will let him do what he likes. But if you deem it too dangerous, my lord, whom the Lord Regent Gilliman appointed to safeguard the East, then I will defer to your judgment, and you may level this place entirely as soon as our rites are over. The choice must be yours. This is my world, but this is your domain.
Felix nodded.
I see the benefits, I see the risks.
What does your father's famed dialectic suggest? Asked Call pleasantly.
Felix looked up at the man that had made him.
That we go in with all due caution.
Call nodded in satisfaction.
Most excellent and wise of you, young Decimus. Your part in this will be remembered for all time.
First, we must secure control of the chapter's defense matrix, or disable it if we cannot, said Felix.
Agreed. Forgemaster Sebastian, Thracian voxed.
The Forgemaster came up from the courtyard to join them.
Explain your plans to the Tetrarch, commanded Thracian.
As you wish.
Sebastian flipped open a panel on his gauntlet and conjured up a small cartolith of the fortress.
I must reach the Defensor Strategium. It lies deep in the mountain, beneath the Emperor's watch. The only access point is from the tower. The Strategium is the sole center control nexus and is our best chance of shutting down the weapons, said Sebastian. Otherwise, we will have to visit each silo individually and destroy them. That will take time.
The locations flashed on the map as he spoke.
Once we have the fortress back under our control and have swept the environs for Xenos threat, Call may begin his work. Agreed, said Felix.
Call inclined his head in thanks. Thracian nodded.
I have a question for the Archimagos, Sebastian said. Ask, fellow acolyte, said Call.
If the device under Mount Pharos is Xenos, how can you extract the information you need? Sebastian asked. How can we be sure you will not be corrupted by its alien taint?
Quite simply, Forgemaster. I propose to ask it.
Call smiled again.
Nicely.
Call tapped the back of his head.
I have my ways. You have seen my means. I realize this looks like a threadbare plan, Decimus, but you must trust me. I know what I'm doing.
Do we have any choice but to trust you? Asked Thracian.
Truthfully, no, said Call.
The shadows were drinking in the day and becoming darker with each ray of sun they sipped away.
Time passes, said Felix.
Let us be circumspect, Call said. I recommend we remain outside the main gates. If there are gene stealers within the fortress, as Lord Thracian thinks likely, we should wait until sunrise. That strain of Xenos is known for being more active at night, and I, for one, would rather face one enemy than two. Lord Tetrarch?
Felix watched the last of the sun passing up the side of the Emperor's watch. Without atmospheric refraction, the sunset was harsh. A stark line between night and day sliced across the masonry, inky shadows on one side, fleeing light on the other.
We rest, said Felix. We enter the fortress monastery in the morning.
The Space Marines set about their tasks. All of them would rest in the safety of their tanks. None would sleep fully, but rely on the catalepsian half-slumber to refresh them. First, perimeters needed establishing, sentries posting on the walls, and the vicinity checked for hidden organisms. By the time they were done, the stars shone steady in the hard vacuum sky. Felix ordered them to rest and prepare. There were further tremors in the night.
Chapter 10. Mountain Dreaming. Circa 10,000 years ago.
Bang!
A single shot. Friedrich's hands gripped Call's wrists. Call's hands were pressed against the great crater wound in Friedrich's chest. Ruined organs shifted under his palms.
You'll never staunch the blood, said Friedrich. I'm going, Belisarius. I'm going to join the Machina Opus, the great work of the machine god, to become pure data.
His human eyes shone in wonder. His cheap augmetic stared away into vistas full of promise. Friedrich, always flighty in life, faced death without fear.
Get out of here. Leave me. I am done.
Friedrich, Please, Friedrich, hold on, my friend, my only friend.
He is dying.
Sir Dane got up from his chair, planting his cane on the carpet, deliberately pinning his words to the floor so that Call might better understand their gravity.
But we can save him, together.
The Altrix Herminia held her gun so that it pointed at the two tech priests on the ground. Smoke still rose from its barrel, the final gasp of the killing shot. The gun had been fired at close range, and Friedrich's blood ran down her shiny clothes.
"You're wrong!" snarled Call. "He can't die!"
But it was obvious to them all that Friedrich was dying. Trying to plug a bolt wound was impossible. It was like dipping his hands into a bowl full of blood. Call bundled up more of Friedrich's robe and pushed it down. It soaked instantly to a deeper red. There was not enough robe and far too much wound. Friedrich smiled weakly. Blood ran from the corner of his mouth.
"He has killed me. I regret that this occurred," said Sir Dane.
He walked around Call slowly, the cane thumping into the rug. Fastidiously, he avoided the spreading stain of Friedrich's blood.
"But it is your fault. Now you know I am serious."
"What you can't take by asking, you'll take by force," said Call. "Such a fine way of persuasion you have."
"Truly, this is the only way to save your friend."
"Belisarius," whispered Friedrich. "Belisarius, don't do it. Please, not for me. Save yourself.
Come with me to the processing room." "Please," said Sir Dane. "Neither you nor I have very much time."
Sir Dane held out a parchment-skinned hand. Call looked up into his face. The anti-gerontics were wearing off. From beneath a veneer of stolen youth, a skull looked out.
"Call,"
said Friedrich. His grip was weakening.
"It hurts, Call. Oh, it hurts."
His hand slipped from Call's wrists. His human eye fluttered closed.
"It is the only way," said Sir Dane.
He extended his hand further. Call stood. Knowledge of the now intruded into the past.
"Tremor event underway. Magnitude 7.7. West tower of Fortress Monastery in danger of collapse. Fugue event occurring. Intrusive quantum synchronization processes detected."
Call fought to follow the machine voice of his inbuilt cogitators. It was like swimming against the current, swimming against a tide, swimming in a river of light. Circa 100 years ago. Light of such strength smote Thracian's eyes. It was a physical blow. His enhanced body responded instantly, but it was too little to blunt the pain. A mortal man would have been blinded. He regretted not donning his helmet.
"I told you it would hurt," said Hadrios. "I suggested you close your eyes."
"I'll keep my eyes open," said Thracian, shading his face against the glare with his left hand. "I don't trust you."
Hadrios nodded, as if that was totally understandable.
"Wait," said Thracian.
With his right hand, he unlocked his helm from his belt and placed it over his head. As soon as the helm systems meshed with his battle plate, the lenses darkened, bringing the glare down to bearable levels. The room still shone like the brightest of days, but he could see clearly enough.
"Come and see the thing that doomed us,"
said Hadrios, beckoning him inside. Thracian entered the room. It was of middling size, a cavity deep in the ship. Two space marines stood guard over a suspension casket. Through the viewing plate was darkness.
Emperor alone knew how Hadrios had got it aboard.
"Do you want to see it?"
"No," said Thracian. "We should kill it."
"Not yet. It will be useful," said Hadrios. "The light keeps it dormant. It is not a full-blood strain, but the hybrids share many characteristics with the parent creatures. Gene stealers have an affinity with the shadows."
"Why have you brought this aboard?" said Thracian. "After what the Tyranids did to Sotha, how could you?"
"I had to," said Hadrios. "We need it."
"Do we?" said Thracian.
The situation had him ready to fight. There was something wrong. The cleanness of Hadrios's armor had struck him when they first met a few hours ago. It did so again. Was he involved in the battle at all? Already Thracian was calculating how he could fight his way free.
Why don't I know you, Hadrios?
He looked at the warrior carefully, wishing that he could remove Hadrios's faceplate and see the man beneath.
There are less than 1,000 of us, only that many, and yet I don't know you. I don't know any of you.
He turned, taking in the space marines guarding the casket.
Our identities were hidden intentionally, though I assure you I am a loyal servant of the Scythes of the Emperor. It is time to initiate you into the deeper mysteries of the chapter.
Thracian snorted.
We are good sons of Ultramar, Gilliman's progeny. We don't have secrets.
All chapters have secrets. Hadrios rested his hand on the casket. Some of which have